Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Solartopia, Solartopia.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh yeah, baby, we started to burn too many things we found. That's the Magnificent Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song, appearing on Tomorrow's Children, the Grammy-winning album. From Appleseed Records, back for another hour in Solartopia. I've got two great guests. One of them is with us, John Brakey. You with us?
I certainly am.
And Mitch Rofsky. Deafening silence from Mitch. Mitch, I hope you call in. I just emailed you. Mitch Rofsky is an old buddy, and he is involved in some really interesting stuff with the green consumers and things like that. Maybe guys in the station, if you get a chance, I emailed you his phone number or two of them. He might be waiting for a call. John Brakey, we're going to start with you. Some breaking news, unfortunate news, actually. You know, in our era of hyper-partisan, extremely polarized politics, we do manage at some point to find people that a lot of people respect, even though they disagree with. And I couldn't probably disagree more about most issues than I do with John McCain. But hearing this guy now has a brain tumor that's cancerous, that's kind of, to put it mildly, that's kind of a bummer. Having gone through some cancer stuff myself, it's not fun, and we certainly wouldn't wish it on anybody, even our worst enemies. And John McCain is not our worst enemy in any way, shape, or form. We can disagree with him, but he actually has integrity, which in this day and age is in such short supply that we'll take whatever we can get. So, John Brakey, I bring that up because you're in Arizona. And yeah. You are, of course, a political animal. Can you give us an idea of what kind of impact? I mean, John McCain obviously is a national figure with tremendous importance in the U.S. Senate and as an opinion leader and as someone people on both sides of the aisle actually respect. What is this going to mean for politics in Arizona?
Well, there's a lot of jockeying around. Some people think that this could be the end for him. I mean, and, you know, what's next? He's a very, believe it or not, he's a very polarizing figure in our state within even his own political party. And a lot of people don't know that some of them in the Republican Party don't think he's conservative enough. And really, he's not well-liked in the Democratic Party, of course, because he's a Republican. And he's really not all that independent or that... you know, that model that they try to play out. Frankly, you know, this is a very sad situation with his health, and my goodness, nobody would wish anybody bad health. But, you know, we hope that this is a signal that there is going to be change, and maybe, you know, that he should, you know, in my opinion, you know, really think about possibly resigning, and let's have a special election, and let's see that if we can elect a senator who really does represent Arizona.
Well, do you feel that John McCain does not really represent Arizona?
I don't know what kind of bacon he's brought home for the state. I mean, you know, he's off gallivanting around the world a lot with his friend Graham, and you know, and there's a lot of friction in the state of and there has been for years. But he does seem to get reelected.
Well, he did last time. Although, of course, that we're going to talk about the meaninglessness of our elections
exactly.
When we get around to it. But nonetheless, Didn't he just get reelected?
Pardon me?
When was he last reelected?
I forget. I think it was maybe 2 years ago, maybe four. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, once I get done with an election, I'm moving on to the next one. I think it was 2 years ago he just got reelected, okay? And so he's got 4 years left in this term is what he has. And so I'd say this is that, you know, of course, in my state, our elections are very easily manipulated, especially in the vote by mail. OK. And we know how fraction magic works, and we see the quirks in the system. And we have found people in this state who were secretly programming 13 out of the 15 counties. OK. And loading the databases through phone modems, okay, which is the same modem that the election results were coming in on. I would say that our state is probably, well, I don't have to say that. As a fact, it was a rating, and out of 50 states, Arizona came out to be the 51st worst district in the country for elections. It is only 50 states, so that's how bad we are. D.C. did better than we did when it came to rating election fraud in the state.
Wow. There you go.
You know, but on the other hand, I believe that happened. I think there are worse states than our state. I think Mississippi is hideous, okay? Georgia, I mean, how could you not rate them as one of the worst? We know what they did to Cynthia McKinney. We know what they did to that famous senator who lost two legs or an arm for our country, and what happened in 2002 to him with the machine. And
Max Cleveland.
Yeah.
Hi.
Is there Mitch? Mitch, you with us?
Yep.
Mitch Roski. Okay, Mitch. Mitch is an old friend, and he's going to talk to us about some green business issues, and then we're going to get back to the current election situation and Donald Trump. We're on with John Brakey. John, I want to finish. John's talking to us from Arizona, where he's an election protection activist, and he's going to stay with us, Mitch, and you're going to. You and I will have a discussion, and he'll probably join in about various things that you're involved in, and then we're going to go back to election protection, because I'm actually very encouraged at a lot of the response that we're seeing to this Ku Klux Klan, Jim Crow lynch mob that Trump has put in power here to track down all those Mexicans who swam across the river on Rio on on election day and voted for Hillary Clinton. But, John, to finish with Arizona, my understanding of the Constitution is that if a senator dies or leaves office, a U.S. senator, that the governor appoints the replacement. Isn't that true?
You know, I don't know that. I don't know. I'm not that sharp on it.
I'm telling you.
I believe that is true.
Yep. Yes, it is the case. So who's your governor?
A guy named Ducey. Okay, he's a Cokehead.
Cokehead.
When I say Cokehead, Koch brothers, he's totally in their camp.
Oh, all right. So he's not exactly a liberal.
Definitely not. And he has done some real sneaky things in our state that really have me concerned, because he's sold in to be president. And there was a proposition that he put across that I think was manipulated that took our trust lands that finance our educational process, and he passed through election, you know, taking part of that money, basically robbing the future to take money not to raise taxes, because we are 49 out of 50 when it comes to schools in this country.
Oh, really?
Very bad, and it's a very desperate situation that we're losing teachers to other states because we just don't pay enough to have good teachers. And then, of course, you know, Arizona, just to let you know, has been, you know, a test lab for the right wing, mainly out of Scottsdale, with the Christian right for many years. That's where the Ronald Reagan kitchen cabinet came from, okay? And so a lot of those have tremendous effects on Arizona. And then on top of that, you know, Florida and Arizona have a lot in common. One sold swampland and the other one sold desert, and they happen to be the same people, and that was mafia connection many, many years ago. And so we have an infrastructure built on bureaucracy. That way the Bonanno family and the Purple Gang and people like that could keep their property taxes low because they bought large tracts of land and then chose to develop it. We are,
so when you're,
that's why
when
Florida and Arizona are a lot alike, the corruption.
What you're telling us is that Arizona is pretty corrupt place, and it's run by the right wing.
Absolutely.
And so if God forbid, John McCain passes, we're not expecting a liberal replacement in the U.S. Senate.
No, but probably one would be appointed. I think right away there would be also an election.
Well, I don't know.
How it would work.
I'm not sure how soon they're required to do another election. I should look it up, actually. Maybe I can while I'm sitting in front of this computer.
Yeah.
And is the state still a very conservative place that would elect a right winger, or do we have a chance to get somebody out of Arizona in an election that might be, resembling a human being?
I think that if we had an honest election, that would be a good chance that we could win it as opposition of the Republicans. Yeah, but tell me that Georgia was an honest election. Tell me that these other elections that we've seen recently were honest. Could be the
Harvey,
same
can I
thing,
ask
I'm afraid.
Harvey, can I ask a question here?
Yeah.
Some time ago, well, fairly recently, Arizona elected moderate Democrats, Domenici being one, Babbitt being another, and recently it has only elected conservative Republicans. So what's going on?
What's going on is that there has been a real shift, and I think that you're talking before 1994, 96, before the electronic voting machines came in, and that is where I think the big shift came in. Maricopa was the first. Pat Buchanan had just won the presidential primary in New Hampshire, and he came into Arizona, and he campaigned really hard. The New York Times polling data had him winning. McCain wrote a letter saying congratulations. The governor, Simonton, made a phone call and said, hey, Pat, you done a great job. I want to be at the party tonight. And the guy came in third. Okay? We do have a congressional district in our state that we do have Democrats, but that's only due to the fact that we passed before the last congressional cycle of gerrymandering is that we passed an independent commission. And that did give us more Democrats, because we were able to break up the hideous problem that we have in this country. I see three things. One is voter suppression, micro-targeting now, the new Jim Crow. The second one, of course, is election fraud. And the third big one, of course, that we have to get things right by 2020 is we have to stop the gerrymandering, where you can win with low numbers.
Yeah,
crazy.
Somebody's breathing into their phone, so... if you can be a little more careful about that, that'd be great. John, if you'll stay with us, we're going to come back to election protection and election theft. I wanted to cover Arizona. Of course, you did produce that great liberal candidate for President Barry Goldwater, who today would probably be considered left-wing. He actually had some integrity, weirdly enough. And you produced Sandra Day O'Connor, who, had her moments, but she was a deciding vote in Bush v. Gore as it put George W. in the White House, and she'll never live that one down. So
exactly.
The hottest place in hell is for those five justices misnamed who overturned our entire election. And I got to say, by electoral process, I got to say there's a very good piece up at Reader's Supportive News by Charles Pierce, who writes for Esquire, about the effect, the impact of the 2000 election on our electoral process. And I did see the other night, this guy drives me crazy. Al Gore came on the Colbert show. And, I guess he's got a new movie out. And he's just talking away there, all calm and Nobel Prize-y and all that stuff. And never, ever mentions election theft. And this is the guy who left George W. Bush and Karl Rove and Jeb Bush steal the 2000 election, He did go to the U.S. Supreme Court, has not said a word since, and goes around making all these great proclamations about global warming and all this stuff, and has never dealt with the issue of election theft. And he was the poster child for election theft. So, yeah, he took it to the Supreme Court, and that was nice. He has never campaigned against the Electoral College, to which they stole it, has never talked about the disenfranchisement of 90,000 people in Florida 2000 in an election officially decided by 537 votes. He just kind of sailed along with John Kerry and now Hillary Clinton. I mean, come on. These multi-millionaires ultimately don't seem to care that much. So when I see Al Gore, I just, my blood starts to boil. He's someone who really should have spoken up a long time ago about this. Anyway, go ahead.
Harvey, I certainly agree with you about what you just said. However, I think John Kerry is even worse. Kerry didn't protest at all. I'm just amazed after what happened in Ohio that he would not.
I agree. I agree. Yes. Well, how about Hillary Clinton? I mean, she just won the election by 2.9 million votes. She won the exit polls in Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, which easily is what turned the Electoral College. And she stopped Jill Stein from proceeding with a recount in Michigan, where she allegedly lost by 10,000 votes, except that 70,000 ballots came in with no choice for president. These were beheaded ballots. And, how does that happen? Come on.
I will come back at the two of you, because it seems to me, and really I blame the press as much as I blame the candidates, it is amazing to me that there isn't more watchfulness on election day as to what's going on, as to who's not being permitted to vote, as to where voting machines are breaking down, as to how long the lines are at various places. And this should all be reported and monitored, and we need to put up some kind of website that enables people to report on what's going on in their precincts so this can all be examined. I mean, right now, as you guys know, if there's a Republican Secretary of State, they control the voting machines, and so you're not going to get anything different than you get on Election Day. There needs to be spot reporting right there at the time as to what's going on in every precinct, particularly inner city precincts.
You're absolutely
right.
So,
yes.
Mitch, obviously we're going to stick with this. We'll get to your green business stuff later. We might as well keep going with this. And I'm very fascinated by what you're doing. Now, tell us real quick, Mitch. You have the Socially Responsible Automobile Club, right?
Better World Club, right.
Better World Club. Tell us about, real quick, where people can get you on the website, and then we'll proceed with our election stuff, and I'll leave you some time at the end of the show so you can talk about it. But
Sure.
Better
World Club, we're the nation's only green auto club, nationwide roadside assistance, travel. We also do auto insurance in any number of states. 1% of our gross goes to environmental cleanup and advocacy, including carbon offsets when you buy auto insurance from us or travel with us. We discount our membership fees if you have a hybrid or electric car. We invented bicycle roadside assistance, have the only nationwide bicycle roadside assistance.
So, I love that, bicycle roadside assistance. That's really great. I mean, I can't fix a flat tire. I have negative mechanical ability. Everything that I start to fix gets worse. And so if I try to change the tire on my bike, I'd probably break all the spokes.
So, well, that's what we're here for.
What is your website?
www.betterworldclub.com. And people should go and check out our e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt.
I like that. I like that.
We were named the Onion of corporate newsletters, which is too high a standard, but I guess I can't reject it.
No, it's great. So we're going to come back to your business. Be sure to remind me when there's 15 minutes left, and we'll talk about that. But I do also want to add here for all you listeners
that I just saw in my email that O.J. Simpson will be paroled. And mazel tov to O.J. I do want to say one thing, which I've been tempted to write about this, but I'm not really an expert. I believe that O.J. should sue the NFL. I mean, this guy was hit in the head 5,000 times. How many times did O.J. run the ball from the time he was in junior high or whatever to his career in football? And I guarantee you, if we could see inside his brain, we'd see some serious damage there. But anyway, mazel tov to O.J. for getting out of jail after 9 years. Don't do it again, okay? Please. All right, let's go back to elections then. You know, you were saying, Mitch, and I think rightly, that you're blaming the press, the media. You know, we don't call it the press anymore. You just showed your age by calling it the press. We call it the media. So, and John, you and I have been working together on these issues. I got to tell you, it's impossible to get the media to pay attention to this. The two words that immediately, and this just happened to me yesterday, I was having lunch with a very well-respected academic, guy I really like. I'm going through this stuff about election theft, and guess what two words came up, as they always do? Conspiracy theory. I mean, you
how
know,
can anybody say that now with the news every day? Where's this guy been? Maybe he could say that a few years ago, but 2016 and 17 has been the year of election fraud and admitting that this thing is hackable, and that's all they do is talk on the news this crap.
Well, you know, I've been watching the news now. You know, it's quite amusing for somebody like me and us to watch CNN and MSNBC and sit there and bash Donald Trump hour after hour. So there's a certain, like, gratification about that. But ultimately, it goes nowhere. Where's it going to go? What's going to happen? They're not going to
impeach him.
They're not going to remove him. And they're all getting great.
But there are things happening in the background. There is discussion of another Help America Vote Act, big bailout, okay? And just like Jonathan Simon says, they'll fix the machine that there's no way from anybody from the outside to hack it. But, you know, you and me both know that we're not worried about outsiders. It's insiders. It's the people who have access, that one person, like the guy I found in Arizona, or Merle King in Georgia, who left the database and all the equipment available for 6 months online. A guy told them, and it was still open. Because what are they doing? Making sure that they can say, gee, we didn't hack it, somebody else did? I mean, it's craziness like that right there that really have me very much burning. And you know, earlier, your other guest said something I think very important, and I agree with it. Elections are not any good unless they're transparent, trackable, and publicly verified. And we are moving into an era that we could make elections that way, that you could go online after an election, pull down the ballot images of your precinct with a cast vote record, and then you could download an app that will count them, and you can watch it count, or you could push a button, and it counts everything after you take one image and program the app. You see what I'm saying? And then you need to take a couple of those images a scientific way and say, now match them against the original, because really it's about getting at the original paper.
Well, that's
and,
the point.
And that's a possibility.
But you're presuming there's original paper. There isn't original paper.
Well, not that's in another, Georgia, but that's going to go bye-bye, okay? You know, the new trend, the new equipment will all be optical scan, which creates a digital image. And that can be back to the original.
Mitrovsky, what do you want to say?
That's existing right now.
Well, in the meantime, one of the things that I think is just so appalling, here you go to your ATM and you get a paper receipt, okay?
Yeah.
When you go to a voting machine, you should, A, get your own paper receipt so you can check it and make sure that it's accurate, and you should get a second receipt that you deposit at the voting station so there is a backup of paper receipts. And then the machines, there can be sampling where the machines are tested against the paper, and it can be confirmed whether or not the machines are accurate.
That's a nice way to think, but voting is an anonymous thing, okay? And it's very, very important that the anonymous part is protected, even though in my state, 85% of the voters vote by mail. Ballot selfies are legal, okay? And I wouldn't want to spend money on a machine that does what? Marks a piece of paper? No, it's got to be hand marked, okay? And it's got to be where it is transparent, trackable, and publicly verified. But doing it, that's the problem with the system. It's not what you're talking about. It's like a bank receipt works because it has an account number tied to a name. This system cannot be that way. And
you can create a machine.
You would have to pass laws
that are not tied to a name, and that people could just check and make sure it's accurate before they deposit it. Wouldn't have to have a name on it.
Yeah.
Well, how many years would that take?
I mean, I'm looking at what we can do right now because 40% of the country is destroying the ballot images, okay? They're hiding the fact that they even exist. These machines are not counting the original ballot. They're counting the photocopy. I just won a court case on this. And the judge said to Pima County, let me ask you a question. If you take voted ballots and you photocopy them, and then you use the photocopies to count, what makes you think you can destroy them? In Ohio, Bob Petrakis went to court, and what did they tell him? Your Honor, we never turned it on. Well, the reality is it doesn't work unless it's on. You see the game it's playing? I'm looking at what we can do now. If we do not fix this system in the next cycle and then get through 2020 and have impact, we're going to go into another cycle of more gerrymandering. And by that time, I think we're going to be very fascist. This whole thing with Kris Kobach and this election voter fraud is really voter suppression. It's really
micro-targeting.
Okay?
All right, John.
And that
John,
is what we're up.
John. Yeah, let's talk about this a bit. First, I want to point out the difference between an electronic ATM and an electronic voting machine is that when you get to the ATM, you get the cash and you get the receipt and then you get robbed. When you go to vote on an electronic voting machine, you've already been robbed. It's already been stolen because so many people have been eliminated. So I want to want to talk about the situation with Kris Kobach and this Ku Klux Klan operation that Trump is setting up. He's got an all-star team there. He's got Kris Kobach, the Kansas Secretary of State, who set up CrossCheck to disenfranchise God knows how many people in 30 states with the cooperation of Republican Secretaries of State. He's got Ken Blackwell, who earned his varsity letter in Ohio in 2004 when he was the Secretary of State. And Karl Rove, by the way, Karl Rove and George W. Bush took one trip on Election Day 2004. They made no public appearances, but they came to Ohio, to Columbus, and met with Kenneth Blackwell in his office. Not with the governor, by the way. They didn't bother with the governor. They just came to see the Secretary of State to make sure everything was taken care of. And then they got this guy, Hans von Spassky, who knows? Well, maybe they'll get the Boston Strangler, Jack the Ripper, a few other, the head of the KKK,
Brewer. Remember, add Jan Brewer into that list. Jan Brewer was the head of the Secretary of State in our state. She was the co-chair in 2004, and same thing. In fact, they targeted in 2002 to make sure they elected in certain states where Secretary of State have powers. Now, you've got to remember, a state like Wisconsin, the Secretary of State has nothing to do with elections. It's state to state. But they targeted key states. Florida was another one for the Secretary of State. They knew what they were doing, and it was all Jim Crow style.
You got to remember that it was Catherine Harris in Florida who turned it in 2000, the Secretary of State there. And I have to point out, and this is very important, the Secretary of State of Ohio is John Houston, who's going to be running for governor. And he, in 2016, and other elections before that, made a point of personally and very, with great detail, if you had the smallest little thing out of line when you came in to vote and you were shunted over to a provisional ballot or had your registration questioned, use the tiniest details. If you put MS instead of MRS, or you didn't include your middle initial, or you had moved, or any little detail that was out of line, he eliminated your vote. And this was challenged, by our great legal teams here in Ohio. Went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court upheld his right to do that. And so, Secretary of State, all over the country now, if you sneeze on your ballot, they will throw it out. And it's a very, very disturbing situation. It gives secretaries of state total power over the who can and can't vote in our country. And, at the bottom line, man, that's the bottom line. I mean, our system is a joke now. Mitch, did you want to say something, Mitch Yourofsky?
The only thing I wanted to add was that, and by the way, I'm just shocked that, seriously, if you did Ms. rather than Mrs., he could throw you out. I find unbelievable. That's just amazing. But having said that, I just wanted to add about the gerrymandering. One of the things that we really have to look at is, like John said, independent commissions. But combined with that, we need to get off of the standard of geography. The standard should be competitiveness. Maximizing competitive seats. And the problem with geography from a Democratic point of view is that Democrats live closer together. It's very easy to gerrymander when Democrats are in urban areas and Republicans are more spread out. So we've got to get away from this classical notion that districts should only be organized around geography. Competitiveness should be the standard.
Yes, and you've got to remember the origin.
I think
John, hold on. Yeah. John, wait. You have to remember the origin of the term gerrymander was there was a guy in Massachusetts. I think he was a signer of the Constitution, actually. His name was Eldridge Gerry. Yeah. He was a judge and a politician in Massachusetts. And he set up the first congressional districts and also the state house. And they called it gerrymandering because all the districts looked like salamanders. And that's where the term gerrymandering comes from. And to take the story further, his great-great-great-great-grandson or whatever the connection was, but was named Jerry Studs with a G. And Jerry Studs was from Cape Cod, representing Provincetown, and he was the first openly gay U.S. congressman. So we love these little historical connections. I actually met Jerry Studs, and he was a distant descendant of the guy who invented gerrymandering. There you go. John Brakey, what did you want to say?
The only thing I was going to add to it is that wouldn't it be nice if we could pass a law in saying that a district cannot have more than five corners?
You mean like the Pentagon?
Or something. Well, I mean, the point I'm trying to say is that these districts are the politicians picking their voters.
Right. Well, I have to say, I am somewhat encouraged by the fierce response to this commission that Trump has appointed. I mean, there has been a lot of stuff, a lot of better articles than I've seen since we started. I mean, I started with this issue in 2004. I live in central Ohio, where I'm leaving in a week, actually. And in 2004, having been registered to vote and voting in the same location since the early 1980s, they denied me an absentee ballot. And so this got me into it. And then my co-author, Bob Fetrakis, we broke most of the major stories about the theft of the 2004 election. And I got to say, it's only taken 12 years, but we are finally starting to see some response from bigger media. Let's put it that way. Charles Pierce is a major writer. His piece, which is in Esquire and Reader Supported News, finally gets to, I think that Chris Kobach has put a lot of people over the line, at least in terms of understanding disenfranchisement. And I've got to say also that the whole Russian hacking thing has definitely, yap, yap, yap about the Russians this way and that way. But the fact is that they're saying somebody can, in fact, hack our election. Now, we've known that for years, and we know that it's primarily Americans. And it's not all that great that they're yelling at the Russians, except that it involves the acknowledgement that our elections can, in fact, be hacked. What do you think about that, Mitch?
I'm with you all the way on that. In fact, that's the same fact, the theory that I work on, that it's most likely somebody in the chain, in the vendors, okay, It's either a min or a kingpin or a kingpin gatekeeper, okay? And that these systems are designed to cheat. And that's what we've come up with after 13 years of investigating.
Yeah, an electronic voting machine is perfectly designed to steal elections. That's its basic function. And, in our book, The Strip and Flip Disaster, America's Stolen Elections, that I co-wrote with Bob Fatrakis, we believe the first American primary that was stolen with an electronic voting machine was done in New Hampshire in 1988. And, of course, it was Bush 1, who had just come over from the CIA. Well, he'd been vice president for a while, but he the CIA pioneered electronic election theft. And Donald Trump is really just blowback from the perfect third world model of a third world dictator who has now come upon us. I mean, he's in there. That's what we call it, strip and flip. You strip the voter rolls, which is Chris Kobach and what he's done, and then you flip the electronic voting machines, which is what Ken Blackwell did in Ohio 2004. And people are now willing, finally, in the major media, to talk about the realities of the stripping of the voter rolls. It's still a little lagging behind on the electronic voting machines, but hopefully we'll get there.
Well, like you guys are indicating, not only can they be hacked, but think how easy it is then to hide who's actually doing the hacking. You know, a Republican could be doing the hacking, but finding a Russian to make it appear that they're doing the hacking, right? You know, knows who's really doing the hacking?
Right. The big theory out right now that I heard is, I think this is very conceivable, that when the release of Vault 7, okay, the hacking tools are there. And now that the whole rest of the world who's sophisticated enough to understand those tools have the keys to get in, and it's also easy now that those tools are out there that the door has to be closed and is to blame somebody else, and then we can go ahead and spend another, you know, $3, $4, maybe $5 billion this time. And then because I had a long talk with Rebecca Mercury. Do you know who she is? Rebecca Mercury? She's been in an election. She's a scientist out of New Jersey who's very involved with the committees that study this problem. And she's been studying it since the 80s. She's just a remarkable lady. And I had a long talk with her because, you know, trying to get her to evaluate where I'm going with the program I'm pushing in 15 states or more. And she was just telling me how that they're already drooling over this new equipment coming out and the next generation of vote-stealing equipment. And the big one that she's warning us about is the $6,000 pencil, okay? That's where a machine will be there that you push buttons and it prints that piece of paper, okay? And then that is what is going to be counted, but it's easily counterfeited. It's very important that we do have hand-marked paper ballots. There's no need to buy $6,000 pencils, okay, and then an optical scanner to count those things it produces. You see what I'm saying? That's where they're trying to go. They're trying to do everything they can to forensically make it hard to challenge an election. If we lose the hand marking and we go to audit, how do you know that you're auditing something that was a human being filled out or a machine filled it out?
Yeah, so what is it about hand-counted paper ballots that people don't understand? And why can't we?
I don't know. I like them. And that's what I'm all about. I mean, if I had my way, you know, I'd like to see the states keep their independence. I'd like to see the feds say, hey, we're going to have a federal election, and all that's going to be on the ballot in one election, maybe it's one person, your representative. Another 2 years, it could be a president and a senator and a representative. In some years, it's just going to be a senator. So you've got, what, at the most, three races to hand count? And if the feds insisted upon doing it that way, then the states would say, hey, look at this. This one, people are voting a certain way, and where there's no transparency, no trackability, no public verification, the results are different. To me, that's the solution. Hand counting, what you talk about.
We get universal hand counted paper ballots. That's easy.
to figure out. And it's a lot cheaper than these electronic voting machines. And we are at the point now, you know, after the debacle in Florida 2000, Bob Ney, a congressman from Ohio, wound up in prison, got the Help America Vote Act through, and we spent all these billions of dollars on the voting machines. But they're now, every one of them is obsolete. I mean, you know, how good is a computer that's 10, 12, 14 years old? So we're in the wave now. They're going to want to replace all these machines. This is the time to stop them and just say, hey, no machines at all. Let's just go with pencils and paper or pen and paper and hand count them, and that's it. Now, I believe that Minnesota hand counts paper ballots, and that's how we wound up with Al Franken. Actually, he won a recount with about 250 votes. But now is the moment to get all this done, and, of course, we're going to be fought against it. We also have to maintain transparent registration rules. That's a little more complicated. I don't know exactly how to do that. Mitch, have you ever thought about how we could do verifiable voter rolls?
I mean, again, I think what we need to do is have observers who can see who is being permitted to vote and who isn't being permitted to vote, and it should be at the polling place. I mean, obviously, you have to register to some extent, but people should not be struck down at that point. I think they should be only struck down when they are trying to vote, and there should be ways of making sure people don't vote at two different polling places. That would be the only,
I like that, yeah.
You know,
of course, you know, in Ohio 2004, a delegation from the United Nations came to Kenneth Blackwell's office as the Secretary of State in Columbus, and he told them that if they got within, this is a delegation from the United Nations, he told them if they got within 100 feet of the polling places, he'd have them arrested. Meanwhile, the Republican lawyers were in all the polling places as challengers, challenging people with the right to vote. So I like that. I think what I'm going to do for theater in next election is I'm going to dress up like a Mexican and come in sopping wet and see if they let me vote. John Brakey, what do you want to say about that?
About that right there, I think we should have same-day registration. And then if you're worried about these people voting, registering in several precincts, they have same-day registration. And right now you're getting a provisional. Once we check out your address and confirm you haven't voted in other places, then we count it, okay? And that would limit it. Because that way, if they say that you were on the rolls, no, I filled out a voter form, and I had it all filled out, and I did my thing there, and then I cast my ballot. So that would be a way, but not in our country. Our history is like you guys are talking about. It's been since the very beginning, it has been voter suppression. When the first people could have only voted with white rich men in the United States, no women, no, you know, horseshoe stores or whatever, or carriage makers. I mean, it had to be people with property. And it's a terrible
thing. Well, listen, it's onward and upward. We've got another round of insanity here. Like I say, I am grateful for the discussion of the Russians because it does get people's dander up, and it has essentially certified the idea that an election can be stolen. I personally believe that Donald Trump is just basically a bag man for the Russian mafia, and that the reason he won't reveal his tax forms is because he has no money, and it's all he owes everything to Putin and the Russian mafia. And we saw actually the story of the guy Paul Manafort, Trump's earlier campaign manager, owed a Russian mafia guy $17 million. I mean, that could have a slight impact on his behavior, I think, during the elections. And I think basically Trump, all his assets are in rubles, and they all belong to Vladimir Putin. And that's what's really going on here. I mean, he's just a good old boy. Not a good old boy, a good fella in terms of where his allegiances are. And we got to start. And the one thing I'm grateful for also, during the Cold War, when Russia and the U.S. were at each other's throats, you had to endure all this nonsense about freedom and capitalism and all these ridiculous ideological disputes. Obviously, it's just a geopolitical great game. And at least with Trump, we're spared all that. There's no ideology here. This guy's just a petty thief, and he's in the and
And so we don't have to, and not only does he have a philosophy, he wouldn't understand one if he saw one. So that much I'm grateful for. We'll see how it unravels. But, you know, if we just wind up with Mike Pence and he goes into the 2018 election with the same totally corrupted system, we're not going to get anywhere.
Well, so
John Brakey, you're welcome to stay with us. Thank you so much. I promise, Mitch, well, I want to talk
Harvey,
to him a bit.
Harvey, let me add one more thing, which is about gerrymandering. A number of years ago, I was lobbying some Democratic senators and staff. And at the end of each meeting, I said to them, now I want to talk to you about something that's not on the agenda. I said, Democrats have to do something about gerrymandering. I said, you guys should be incentivizing states to set up independent commissions with the standard not of geography but of competition. And in each office, they looked at me and said, oh, the Democratic House members would never go for that. And I said, why? Because they're winning under the system as it is today? And in every office, they said, yeah.
Yeah.
So as much as we're talking here about, you know, the changes that are necessary, it's just so disappointing that we're not hearing the same thing from Democratic leadership in Washington.
Well, they also haven't helped us at all with electronic voting machines or stripping the voter rolls because, you know, they stole it from Bernie. And then Bernie, Trump stole it from Hillary. Same stuff.
If
so,
I could bring
that
up one point, Harvey, you know, I've been working with the Democratic Party off and on since 2004. I was the head of their Election Integrity Commission in Arizona as an investigator. And, you know, one of the things that they were always very nervous about is that if people really knew the truth, maybe they wouldn't vote. And I'm really worried about the fact now that election fraud is in the mainstream media, it's talked about almost every day, how many people, how could this be used in voter suppression that people are going to say, you know, what's the use in voting? It really doesn't matter. All I'm doing is aiding and abetting the thieves who steal it. And that has me concerned that it could be used as voter suppression maybe. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and of course, the primary thing that this Klavan or a Klan group that Trump has put in with Kris Kobach is that people are turning in their voter registration. They're afraid of being, you know, tracked down by the government. So, you know, it's a bummer. It's a tough situation all around. We're going to have to climb our way out of it. You know, we've been in tough situations before. Richard Nixon did get reelected in 1972 and looked like he was unassailable, and 2 years later, he was on a helicopter home. So hopefully, we'll do that with Donald Trump and get something better. John Brakey, you're welcome to stay with us. Mitch Romsky, I wanted to switch over a bit and tell us about your green business ideas and your auto club and what you hope to do now with certifying products.
Well, thanks, Harvey. Yes. While as we talked about a little earlier, Better World Club, we're the nation's only green auto club. What we really have always wanted to be, and we're in the process of getting there, is the nation's only club of socially responsible consumers. And so we are in the process of building our website right now, where we are going, and hopefully we'll be live before the end of the year, where we will be providing social ratings on thousands of products, and people will be able to then determine. We're using the name Buying Power, still under Better World Club, but we'll be using Buying Power because consumers have the power. Consumers have the power to change a lot about what corporations do through their purchases, and a lot has been talked about and done around impact investing, which is all very important. But, you know, there are two operators and there are three operators in the marketplace, employees, investors, and consumers, and we think consumers have to be part of this as well.
Well, what are the standards that you're going to be, how are you going to rate these products? What are you looking for?
What we're looking at is the environment, labor, safety, and then social, which could include animal testing and a variety of other things. So we're looking to look at those four areas. And of course, it depends a little bit on what the product is. You know, we might be looking, our standard, our, what we're examining for automobiles might be slightly different than what we're looking at for, you know, laptops. But those are the basic areas that we're looking at.
And well, how are you going to do How are you going to do this?
Oh, there's information out there. There are various, both our ratings and other forms of information. So we will have 10 or 20 different sources, if not more, of to be able to rate the products on. And the toughest thing for us, another thing we want that we are going to be wanting is people to rate products themselves, and we're going to try to get our consumers not only to make decisions with their dollars, but also to use social media to pressure the companies. You know, the biggest hole we're finding, and this will come as no surprise to you, is we would like to know where every product is made. You know, we think it's more important that products, for the most part, for the American market, be made in the United States. However, tracking down where products are made and therefore how they're made overseas is not easy, and corporations do not feel like disclosing that many, many times. Again, it largely depends on the product. You can find out much more information about where automobiles are made than certain other products. But
like what?
For
what other products?
Oh, for clothing, for example, it's very difficult to find out who's making what and what and how they're making. You know, and the sad thing is that foreign manufacturing is so ingrained that even when companies are often trying to do the right thing, so let's take Nike, for example, which has truly improved their standards, nonetheless, they're dealing with contractors who then lie to them about what they're doing. And so tracking all of that down, we need much more corporate disclosure and corporate effort, which means we need consumers pressuring corporations much more about all of that. And we're going to be trying to organize all of that as well.
What do you think of the how is this going to be impacted by the rise of Amazon and their, to me, terrifying purchase of Whole Foods?
Well, I don't have a really good answer to that because we're obviously right at the very, very beginning of what that might mean. But as someone who is certainly worried about monopoly, you know, Amazon is more and more. How about the fact that they control Whole Foods and the Washington Post?
Yeah, really. I mean,
are we really heading to a world where, you know, where Amazon controls everything, or Google and Amazon just split everything up? You know, now, of course, it's conservatives who would say they're really terrified of Amazon because they consider Bezos to be too liberal. But having said that, yeah, I mean, we need to be looking. I do think it's worrisome. I mean, I think it's worrisome what's happening to stores. And just generally, even apart from Amazon, you know, just what's happening with retail online versus offline. But,
well,
you know, what does that
mean
for shopping local?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Amazon controlling Whole Foods is a new Walmart. And, you know, what they're going to do to food providers is devastating. I mean, are they continue the what I was not a fan of Whole Foods, God. God knows. I mean, the whole paycheck and the whole deal, but at least they bought local. And you could rely on them, I guess, with stuff that was going to be organic. I mean, Amazon, why would Amazon even care about any of that?
Well, I disagree with you on there, I guess. You know, Amazon is buying a brand. And generally, the most difficult thing about social responsible business is succession, okay? It's Ben and Jerry's selling to Unilever. You know, it's how do you keep these, you know, companies being socially responsible. And it's, you know, obviously it's a mixed bag. On the one hand, they do want to maintain the brand. I do not believe Amazon is suddenly going to make Whole Foods anything less than a natural foods retailer. But having said that, what we find for the most part is that when there's a successor acquiring from the original entrepreneurs, they freeze the company as to where they are. So Ben & Jerry's still does almost exactly what it did when Ben and Jerry sold the company. You know, they screen out for, you know, cows with bovine bovine hormones and things like that. But they're not doing anything new. They're not doing the next thing that Ben and Jerry, you know, would have done. And similarly, will Amazon freeze Whole Foods so 20 years from now it looks like the Whole Foods of today rather than whatever the next thing is?
God, I don't know, man. You know, and also, you know, we're, as you mentioned, we're seeing so many brick-and-mortar so-called stores going out of business, people, all the way down to, I think, Macy's, but the Andersons and H.H. Gregg. I mean, God, it's terrifying. You know, everybody's going to be buying online, and it's all really going to be go through Amazon. I mean, how do you maintain social responsibility monitors when it's all being done online?
Yeah, I mean, Taylor Shoes, I think, closed 400 stores. And, you know, the thing that would drive me nuts, I mean, I feel very fortunate that I'm not in a goods business where, you know, where we have to worry about this. But, you know what showrooming is, where someone comes in, tries something on your store, then walks out and buys it online. And I know right. that would just drive me crazy if that, you know, if I observed that. And yeah, I feel very badly for what's going on with retailers. And it is worrisome. I mean, because, well, I mean, another aspect of this is, you know, antitrust law is virtually being eliminated. You've probably seen what's going on in Europe with Google and Microsoft as opposed to what's happening here, which is nothing.
Well, be a little more explicit about that. What is happening in Europe? Are they fighting the takeovers?
There's apparently there's a European Antitrust Commission. I assume it's part of the EU, and it has fined Google, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. It has now fined Google, and they're negotiating. And I think they did something similar with Microsoft at one point. So they, in both cases, now I don't know what, I believe with Google it hasn't been resolved yet. I'm not sure what happened with Microsoft, if I have that right. But it at least looks at something, you know, the structure of companies. Whereas here, antitrust law has virtually gone away.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, it's gone, and this whole idea of a free market or in anything. Is maybe in laundries or who knows? I don't. We don't. There's no market economy left. That's for sure. This country is. You know, go ahead.
Yeah. The other thing that I just want to throw out there is you know what's going on with our taxes as well, like you, Harvey, I post on Huffington Post. One of the things that I've written about is how we need tax reform, and that by tax reform, we should be looking at reforming the alternative minimum tax. And as you may know, you know, Trump is trying to get rid of it, even though it's the only thing that has made him pay taxes recently.
Well, that's why he's getting rid of it.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. I felt very badly when Rachel Maddow... Rachel Maddow...
We're done. Mitch, Mitch Posky, John Brakey, thank you so much. I look forward to the podcast coming back next week or another time, and we'll talk some more. Thank you so much. You've both been great guests.
Soletopia, Soletopia, Soletopia.